Web3, the Web3 podcast brought to you by Forge. Now, as usual, I'm your host, Tom McDermott, and this is the podcast that speaks to industry experts in the Web3 space in a jargon-free manner so that we can all understand what's really going on. Our latest guest is SeaWorld's Josh Miller, who I'll let introduce himself. Josh, thanks for joining us. I know you're particularly busy at the moment, but for those that may not be aware, what can you tell us about your career at Cardano and how you got into SeaWorld?
Well, sure, yeah. I started back in 2017 as Charles Hoskinson's assistant. I came on board just when it was being a crazy time in the ICO boom that we were having. So right off the bat, I started traveling with him and just, I really learned and got baptized by fire with everything Cardano and Web3 and crypto. Traveling with him to over the course of a couple of years, 33 countries. Then from there, I went into commercial because I really had a knack for NFTs and opening up countries. Yeah. So on the countryside, I actually opened up the country of Mongolia, where we just went to visit. Did a lot of great things there, made some great people, did a Haskell course out there, and ended up hiring on some people for IO itself and expanding our reach and making really good connections out there. And then with the NFT thing that kicked up, I had a knack for it. If you look at NFTs as like products, right? It just really clicked with me, and I was really dived in and got involved in that. And then from there, just with what IO was doing, they were looking to spin out something that could focus specifically on the NFT realm, and that's where SeaWorld came from. So I came over here to SeaWorld once it got spun up to help organize its direction and get everything set up and going and bridge that gap between creating an NFT product on Cardano, but also how can we work with the community.
You touched upon it there, Josh, and of course you spent time working as Charles Hoskinson's PA. What was that like? And with your unique knowledge and, I guess, insight, what do you think's made him so successful?
You know, with Charles, it was a wild trip. There was always so many things going on. And with IOG being a decentralized company, one of the main roles I had was while we were doing the conference tours and everything we were doing, making sure that the CEO stayed connected with his people who were spread out over 16 countries. So it was constant juggling of time zones, making sure he was available and how can we make this and that work. It was really, it kept me on my toes a lot.
Sounds tiring as well.
It was. We get back. I remember every time we got back, we had this rule. When we got back, it was 24 hours, no contact. He couldn't call me for anything. I wouldn't call him. We just go home and relax.
Love it. And I guess spending all that time together, you must have a favorite Charles story you can share with the listeners.
Oh, God. My favorite story is that we were in Hong Kong and we were there for a conference and we were killing some time one day and we went out to eat and they had this really good dessert. It was like a vanilla pie of some kind or a cake or something. And so I put some in my backpack and we're going to take it back to the hotel. So we're walking back. We're walking down this road and all of a sudden we see a monkey and it just stares us down. It just stares us down. And Charles and I look at each other and we look at the monkey and then another monkey hops up on the fence. And we're like, uh-oh. And then, like, I swear it was all at once, like seven or eight more of them hopped on the fence and started eyeballing my backpack. And I'm like, oh no, here we go. And Charles looks at me, and it was like something out of a movie. He was like, run. So we booked it, and we had this whole group of monkeys chasing us down the street. And then we finally got back to the part where it was like into the city and the monkeys won't go in there. So they just stopped and him and I booked it into the first building we could find.
Wow. We've got Trafalgar Square in London over here with pigeons, but it's not quite the monkey example you've given. So that is quite a story. I want to talk about Cardano, if I may. And in your view, what is it that makes Cardano so different?
You know, Cardano, besides being a proof of stake and everything you know about environment and all that, Cardano is really based on the community and its mission and what it's trying to do. It's trying to bank the unbanked. It's trying to give advantage to the disadvantaged. And it's incredibly community oriented. It's not fragmented. It's not siloed. From my point of view with NFTs, it's a very, very loud and active community. I mean, anybody who sees this on Twitter, if there's a poll that has Cardano, we've probably dominated.
Now, that's really interesting. And the Cardano ecosystem is pretty vast as well. There's plenty going on. What's the secret to how it all functions?
You know, how it all functions is people have taken up roles and responsibilities on their own. So NFT guilds, metaverse guilds, DeFi guilds, they're all over the place. And you have some really passionate people from the community and from IOG that step in and try to be there and help to foster things along. You've got Ben and Tim over at IOG that are just always in the community, always listening. Then you've got people like Rick. You've got Bullish Dumpling. You've got Hosky and all these other community people that are involved in everything. And then you've got the fun ones, the people that keep this from being something boring that everybody can get into. And that's like Hosky. He's such a trip. You know, you've got you've got Ape Society. All of them are just fantastic and fun to be with. And they really help to balance out being on the board and technology side to talking about what excites them and what these use cases are and putting some fun and twist to it so that anybody from anything could find some niche or something that they want to get involved in.
At Forge, we've been working closely with you, of course, building the first official Cardano to Ethereum NFT bridge. What can you tell us about this project? And why do you think it's so important?
You know, it's a really exciting project to have a bridge and how these work with bridging NFTs over. You know, we've seen people go and recreate their assets on ordinals. You know, we've seen other bridges that are starting to come up. But for Cardano to Ethereum, it helps with exposure and helps with adoption, especially for those that are like, you know, well, it's Cardano. You know, I'm on Ethereum, I use ETH, you know, I use MetaMask and things that Cardano just aren't at yet. But if you're able to use these bridges, you can come and explore and you can come and drive more liquidity and exposure to your own projects or things that are going on in your community. And what's really exciting about the project is the use cases of NFTs have evolved, you know, since we even started talking about a Cardano and Ethereum NFT bridge. So one thing that I'm excited about is the ability for us to work with other games that are out there.
Right. Okay.
You know, we see games coming up all the time that are going to be on Ethereum, and you can do cross assets, you can do inner ecosystem interoperability, and it really gives that flavor and exposure for people to go out and do marketing for their title or marketing for what they're doing, being able to cross that bridge back and forth, and it's really going to help to overall bridge communities together in ways that make sense for them and give exposure. Like you could have Web and Sappy Seal. He can bridge a couple over to Cardano and people can come and play with what we can do with like lending pools or put it into a couple of games like Goombles and others. And then on the other side, there's an opportunity for, you know, Goombles and others or even Ape Society to take it over to Ethereum and start being part of that conversation, part of that ecosystem, especially with what we're seeing, you know, drive up around people's imaginations. I really think it's going to be an exciting time, especially for how this bridge is going to operate. For people to explore and give it a try. And that way they're outside of their bubble and able to really grow their perception.
Cool. So we're going to switch focus now to NFTs. As we know, Cardano NFTs are known as CNFTs. How are these evolving then, Josh? And what makes them so different to NFTs on other chains?
You know, it's just people on Cardano and NFTs are not afraid to take a risk. Okay. You know, you've got ones that have generated art. You've got ones that have generated, you know, multi-purpose incentivization for it. It's just the use cases are growing and growing. You know, one exciting one for me is the Ape Society and how they're doing an inter-ecosystem and really creating an NFT play that makes sense to be a part of the story and the community, where it's most certainly not a cash grab. And it really branches away from what it first, you know, came out to be is just a PFP. You know, we've got things like SIP68, which allows for the dynamic updating and upgrading of NFTs, which is a little different from what Ethereum uses with 1155 and others, where we're moving away from how these things are updated and all that to try to save on how we have to, you know, hit the chain so hard when it comes to updates and things like that, to how can we update metadata and cycle things through in a way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's just some real fun and fascinating use cases driven by innovation that I think a lot of people are really going to focus on and are going to see a lot of, especially with SeaWorld and what we're doing. It's just exciting for the Cardano NFT community and CNFT for how they're taking all this and they're building communities around it. They're building explorers around it. They're building DeFi around it. They're building even conferences around it, like CNFTCon. All kinds of great stuff are evolving. And the best part of it is it's incredibly community driven. It's not like Polygon where it's at the top and they're driving it with Polygon Labs and stuff like that. We're really, you know, the community's at the driver's wheel.
I'd like to move on to SeaWorld now, Josh, because you are, in fact, the VP of partnerships at SeaWorld. What do they do exactly? And what is the link to Cardano?
Sure. So SeaWorld is a spinoff of IOG, the research and engineering company behind Cardano, and they wanted to do something that could have something focused on Web3 and NFTs and implementation and all that. And that's where SeaWorld came from. So when we came on, we started looking at where can we make the most noise. You know, we've all seen the things that are growing, but here lately has been gaming. And so we've really stepped into the gaming arena where we're going out and we're licensing old games and IP. You don't have to build a game from scratch anymore. You don't really need to. Gaming has been around long enough where you can look back 10, 20 years, and there are amazing titles with amazing, vibrant communities around them that are still modding those games to those days, to this day. And you can take those titles and you can update their textures, you can update their engines, you can update everything they're built on. You can plug in blockchain into it. And what we're really, really focused on is how can we make NFTs beneficial to gaming versus just making it a play to earn or anything like that. So we're looking at building an ecosystem of SeaWorld titles, either ones that we develop or companies that we partner with that are developing titles. And how can we take IP and NFTs and we can cross-pollinate them with other games? That's something that Sony just recently filed a patent for. Going cross-platform with IP using NFTs. And that's solely the biggest focus of SeaWorld. So we have like fighting games and space sim games and third-person shooter games and all that, where you're going to have some sort of crossover with those NFTs. So what may unlock, you know, an avatar in one title, in another one, it'll unlock a skin, it'll unlock a weapon, it'll unlock special levels or special difficulties, all kinds of things to make them really useful and dynamic. And you know, the ways we're going across that, like I said, is with licensing, but it's also with partnering. And we can use the SeaWorld platform, our funding, our reach, our connections and all that to actually help all the gaming companies out there that are just, you know, small time developing their titles, give them a platform to lean on. You know, think of a Steam of Web3, you know, a more Web3 focused Epic platform, if you will, things of that nature. But then we're also kicking it up another notch. What we're doing is something called digital twin. And it's not in the digital twin sense that you think of today, where it's like a digital copy of a purse or a jacket or some sort of matter like that. We're actually taking influencers, gaming influencers, gaming stream focused influencers, and we're making a digital twin of them. So this person goes through this portal, and it's their Web3 version of themselves. So they're going to evolve and have different experiences and exposures based on the world that they've explored. On the digital side, so they can hop into our games, they can hop into metaverses, they can do this and that, but they can also stream. And we're working with a great company called InWorld.ai to plug in AI personality to it, so we can really configure them and give them a life of their own. That way, we're not representing more or less the actual physical person and the talent, the influencer. We're kind of breaking that model, and instead of having to work with the agencies that they're with, we're just using their initial likeness and other attributes to get in there and then create more or less a digital agency of our own where we have all these streamers and all these adventures coming up. And there's a lot of things that you've seen up and coming, like you've seen probably in Asia with VTubers. Same idea and concept. Let's get them into Web3. Let's get them into Cardano Warriors. Let's get them into Forge. Let's get them into Virtua. Let's get them into you know, titles that we have coming out. And that's to help drive that focus from not just being a place for Web3 gamers to go, but also for Web2 you know, stream connoisseurs and gamers to go and check out because they've got these experiences, they want to be part of it, or, you know, it's their favorite streamer, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got a lot of different angles we're coming from with the sole foundation of it being around gaming.
And is that how, Josh, you plan to sort of entice the sort of Web2 gamer or the PlayStation, Xbox gamer over to that way of thinking? Is that what you say? Because if I was at a dinner party with friends at the weekend and there's a couple of keen gamers there, I'm sure they'd say, well, why do I need to move, Tom, from what I'm doing? I'm quite happy where I am and playing the games in the environments and, you know, with the consoles I've got at the moment.
Yeah, you know, for streamers, it's really about different ways to monetize their revenue stream. So, you know, when you are on Twitch streaming and all, you have a couple of ways you can do it, or on YouTube or in gaming tournaments, et cetera. But with Web3, it really opens up your ability. So you can be streaming, you know, playing our games and all that. And if you're on our platform, you know, we have tipping functions where it's not just fiat, it's also certain crypto tokens as well. So with crypto tokens, you know, it could be ADA, it could be Forge, it could be, you know, it could be a whole number of different things. But these different tokens you get can actually open up your ability to go and network talk to other projects that are out there or use them for different purposes. And in this meantime, it's also that how can you monetize yourself with Web3? So we think about what you can do with NFTs. You can have your digital twin avatar can have an NFT collection, which is driving value through utilities throughout the ecosystem. And then you can do sponsored things where you can have weapon skins, game skins, et cetera, but you're in control. It's not the agency taking the cut. It's not your manager telling you what you can and can't do. It's really you are capitalizing on you. It's the same way that people feel about, how they go and can own their brand through things like OnlyFans. Only this is definitely more gaming focused, but it's own your brand, own your monetization streams. Come and get more pieces of the pie than you thought was even possible in a lot of different ways you didn't even know exist.
With that in mind, then, Josh, what is your sort of overall vision for SeaWorld?
You know, my vision for SeaWorld is to see it as that hub that everybody can come to and be a part of, especially on the gaming end, and a place to explore. And it's a safe place where that we're not trying to sell you on some PFP. We're not trying to sell you on, something that you would consider probably an NFT scam. But we're really taking to heart the problems with video gaming itself, where you put all this money and time into a video game, and if they sunset the servers, well, that's it. It's all gone. End of story. So we're trying to actually solve real world problems with video games. And we're also trying to help and entice streamers, creators, everybody out there, come and be a part of this and create your own revenue streams, not by just spinning up a project and being on your own and having to figure out what utility you're going to do, or are NFTs safe to do this, or, oh God, am I ripping off art, or who's going to copy me? But through a monetization strategy that actually benefits you and your core focus of what you're good at. You're great at gaming, great, come work with us. You love to stream as a creator, great, come work with us.
There's been a lot recently, Josh, about the importance of maintaining creator royalties after NFT marketplace Blur allowed users to bypass royalty payments. What's your view on this debate, and how are Cardano and SeaWorld tackling the issue?
You know, SeaWorld and Cardano and the community and all of our marketplaces absolutely 100% back royalties. Okay, for creators and what they're doing and how they create things and, the blood and sweat that go into it. One of the main enticing things about having NFTs and smart contracts and all is royalties, benefits the creator so that the story doesn't end like we see right now, where if you create art and you put it on a t-shirt, you sell the t-shirt and it's gone. These things can change hands and have different utilities and all these other purposes added to them. And the great part about technology is the innovation. Okay, what you did and what you planned on doing with it for right now could change 6 months down the road with an entirely new use case. So you should be a part of that. A creator should want to contribute to that, in a lot of different ways. It's like, what if modding a game, the mod you created, that thing you put your blood and sweat into, you release it for, a nominal fee, and people go and take it and can go and resell it, so you can have these skins and these modded environments all over the place, and you can add to it and can contribute to your time and the effort that you put into it. It's really important for creators that they aren't burnt out, or they're like, why do I want to do this when I'm not getting anything back from it? Or, I did it once, it was fun, I'm never going to tackle it again, when this is technology that you can play with. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to royalties, hands down, SeaWorld, Cardano, JPEG Store, Flipper, Plutus.art, everybody is absolutely committed to that.
I always like to try and end with a prediction question for the guests, but I think a little unfairly, Josh, I've got two for you. So here they are. First of all, what is your prediction for NFTs in 2023 and beyond? And secondly, what do you think could be the biggest catalyst for mainstream adoption of Web3?
You know, for NFTs, we've seen them really set apart from following the trends of the crypto market. So when prices are down, it hasn't stopped people. When prices are up, it hasn't really seen much of an increase. I think for NFTs, one of the biggest things we're going to see is a shift from the homage and omen of being an NFT to something more along the lines of digital collectible, because that's what has been the biggest strife, and it's like NFT has become a bad word, more or less.
Right.
So I think we're going to see more of a move towards, these aren't necessarily NFTs, these are taking the place of digital collectibles, and that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
I think digital collectibles really give people a chance to understand it from a collectible perspective, and then start to see the benefits behind the technology of it. Like one of the biggest things being royalties and things like that. So things that you can do with it to really strengthen your collectible or really be part of a message or a real finding. So my prediction is we're going to move away from really NFT terms and more digital collectible terms. And it's going to get more and more mainstream, where you're going to hop on and play a game or do things like that. And it's going to be just like the Reddit effect, where they got these avatars and they had no idea they were even NFTs. They just thought they were cool little digital collectible avatars. I think we're going to see that direction more and more, where it's more blending into the environment we know rather than trying to create something that stands out and stands alone and people are afraid of what they don't know. Let's see. The biggest catalyst for mainstream adoption of Web3, I see this year being a kickoff of gaming. I think we're seeing a lot more mainstream movement of gaming, especially as play to earn. That model is dying, dead, doesn't work. We've all figured it out. And now we're seeing bigger and bigger players get into this. Like I said, Sony just filed a patent for cross-platform NFTs for their PlayStation. You know, you got Epic doing great and wonderful things. Ubisoft reconsidering their stance. You know, we've seen great partnerships. You know, overall, what helps in the environment is everybody getting involved, and that's where you're going to see the crossover and blockchain. So things like Polygon working with that great gaming company out of South Korea, bringing that game online, I think is fantastic, because you need to get gamers, you need to get communities on board, and then let loose and let them go explore. Well, I like this. What other games are out there that meet my taste, that meet my appetites? You know, another big catalyst thing is we're going to see bigger and bigger games. You know, right now, a lot of the games are really something you look at and you swear to God, it's more meant for mobile. And I think we're starting to see more AAA enticed action want to get involved. And that's going to be the major difference when we start to see those major titles or those ones that have, you know, the proper VC funding to put in that kind of dollar amount and can really crack that code of how to generate revenue from that. We're going to see a big hit with that. And I think that's something that's coming very soon.
Josh, absolutely superb. If any of the listeners would like to reach out and get in touch, perhaps ask you a couple of questions or find for more information about what you're doing at SeaWorld, et cetera, are there any social channels that they can reach out to you on?
So right now we've only got c-world.io, just the website. We're currently going through a rebrand though. It looks like it's going to be a reflect.io, reflect with a K, R-E-F-L-E-K-T. And those socials should be spinning up here soon. We just acquired the domains, so we're waiting for those to transfer over. But right now the greatest way is to go onto the c-world website or to find myself on Twitter, seaworld_Josh. My DMs are always open, and there are also ways to schedule some time with me or check some things out on the website.
And he is very good at getting back to people, I must say. Josh, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
So thanks again to Josh there. And there's just time for one piece of other business, and that's to announce the launch of YouMe and Web3 Live. YouMe and Web3 Live. Well, this is our regular Twitter Space show that provides you, the listener, with the opportunity to quiz industry experts on their projects in real time every single Tuesday. If that's something you think you might be interested in, do head over to Forge Official on Twitter. That's F-O-R-J Official on Twitter. And hopefully we'll see you there before the release of our next podcast in a couple of weeks. Until then, take care.